Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bry.
Oh, good morning, everybody. Thursday's edition, Kristen Bry alongside. A lot of news being made last night in Wisconsin.
Well, was it being made or was it being speculated?
Our own conjecture? Our own
speculation?
Teammate. Well, until it's confirmed, it's all, you know, basically innuendo, gossip, speculation, maybe going to happen. What we're talking about is last night our teammate John McCure from the Wisconsin Afternoon Program, along with Julia Fellow, tweeted, I believe that was the first mention, that the governor of the state of Wisconsin, who we, by the way, actually had on our show talking about this very issue. That's the other thing about this little side conversation. All the people speculating about it, none of them have actually interviewed Evers. We have, and we're not speculating, but we have thoughts on it.
Which little flex.
Yeah, a little flex there, which I think is an interesting detail.
Some might say a dazzling detail.
Yes. Way to listen to the show yesterday. Did you listen back? Did you go back and listen? I did. All right. So, John McCure, our teammate, who's plugged in, let's be honest, he's plugged into politics like few others that work in media in Wisconsin, no question about that, basically said, from what he's hearing from it, some sources that would know, that Governor Tony Evers has decided to not run for a third term. That's what John, and I'm paraphrasing, it wasn't the exact tweet, we can look it up if you want to. Others in the local media have also sort of said the same thing, although there's a lot of backpedaling. Look, Dan Bice, I think Dan Bice said it too.
The bigger story than what people are saying off the record and sources and stuff was what broke yesterday, which is that he hasn't raised that much money in comparison to how much money he had raised at this point in 2021, right, ahead of his second term, or what running for his second term. And he had $5 million in the bank at this point of that year versus now he has $725,000.
I think that's what he raised. I think he has $2 million in the bank.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's raised so far. Yeah. Sorry. And so I think more of the speculation coming from that of like, well, if he was really running again, would he have higher numbers, you know, compared to 4 years ago? That seems like a little bit more to go off of than sources are telling me.
Yeah, maybe. You know, well, we're going to play that clip a little bit because, I mean, he didn't answer the question when we asked him on the show directly. Was that last week we talked to him?
Why this?
Interest?
Why this? Not this. Secrecy is maybe not the word. Why the suspense?
I think it's a big decision for the governor. He's. I said this before, and it's not a breaking news. He's the most popular Democrat in the state. I know people like Dan Schaefer don't like him, and others.
I think he's the most popular politician in the state.
He could be. Yeah. According to Charles Franklin at MU Law School polling, yes. He's the only one that polls close to 50%, which in this state is like a gold mine. It's the nirvana of polling because most of these people are like in the 20s and 30s, if they're lucky, and some are less than that. I'm talking about you, Robin Voss. I am just saying.
Least popular politician in the state.
Although.
Very effective.
Probably
but
the
just
most powerful politician
yes,
in the state.
And sometimes heavy is the head that wears the crown.
Depends what you want, right? So I think the governor is weighing the decision. His spokesperson, his comms director, Bert Cutterbeck, had basically said this is not true. Now,
did you reach out to her?
I have not reached out to her. I was reading what she's saying. Yeah, she's been on social media as well. I will reach out to her because, as you know, we've offered to have the governor on the show, and he's been on for like the last 7 years I've done State Fair. So I would expect, regardless of the decision that he makes, and it's also not a decision that he makes alone. He has a wife, Kathy, former educator. As you know, and I know, when you're in a relationship, these are often co-decisions. Even when you're running for office, these are big decisions. And I would assume at the age of 73, asking your spouse, in his case, Kathy, should we do this again? I bet she's got an opinion on it. And she's,
well, that's why I asked that question. Yeah. I was like, all right, it's one thing what you want to do. What does your wife want to do?
Absolutely. Because, hey, I'm someone that loves to travel. I'm sure the governor probably does as well, or whatever his version of retirement would look like. It's not an easy job. That's a tough job. This is a state that we beat each other up every damn day on the subject of politics. And in this state, we love to fight back and forth. And there's even members of his own party, as we've talked about, who aren't happy with him and like to see him step aside. Mm-hmm. But again, I'll remind those people, he is the most popular elected in the state of Wisconsin. Let's play the clip, if we could, Jazz. Let's play the clip when we actually asked the governor about this. Does that make it easier for Governor Tony Evers to say, hey, you know what? Maybe I'll stick around for a few more years.
No, it has nothing to do with it.
Because you said after the budget process, you'd start making those calls.
Yeah, right. And I will. It'll happen in the near future. But the budget wasn't a defining moment. Believe me, there's all sorts of other defining moments that I can talk about when I make that decision.
Well, that was it. That was me getting cut off from asking about Kathy.
Which is a very relevant piece of this. So what do you think those other defining moments are? The budget was a big one, and we asked them in long form about how the process went, and he said, he admitted this was a better one than the other two. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that was a game changer, sort of. What are the other things, other than the opinion of his significant other, that'll make that decision for him? What do you think?
I mean, without knowing him personally, I would say that. I would say basically getting the budget done. And what he wants to do with the rest of his life. I mean, I just don't know, like, what other tea leaves would he be reading as far as likelihood of, because I mean, like you said, likelihood of getting reelected is higher because he is popular.
Incumbents are always popular.
Incumbents do well in Wisconsin. But I don't know what else could happen between now and, I don't know, the end of the month. That he's still weighing, like, what could actually change his mind?
Yeah, let me answer with no inside knowledge whatsoever, other than having talked to the governor, not about this specifically, but when he was on the show. Are there potential candidates, ready to step up? I think the answer for Democrats is, you bet. There's a lot of them
who want to run, who are waiting to run.
Absolutely. And I would be more interested in if this does happen, if he does say, I'm not going to run again, who would be the early favorite in that race? I've got my thoughts. Yeah.
You want to talk about it when we come back?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right. This is Point Taken on WTMJ.
Point Taken on 620 WTMJ on this Thursday edition. Kristen and Steve. From the text line 608, I'm just a schlubby guy who gives like $25 a month to a variety of Dems, and I haven't given to Evers because I have no idea if he's running. And I've received Evers' fundraising mail, but there are bigger things to give to right now. If Evers announced he's running today, still reading from the text, I'd be totally in and donating. He's the best bet for Dems, and this state can't afford to have another GOP governor wreck it. One thought from the text line. I said last week when we had him on, I think he's running again, but I have no insider knowledge. And I also think that position could have evolved in a week or two. I don't know that this decision was made 2 months ago. Maybe he's just making it now.
What if it was, though? I mean, I think that's the thing why I say what's if he's already decided, which there's a chance because he's going to have to play the game. And obviously, I think announcing before the budget was done would have been stupid as far as being a lame duck governor trying to negotiate a budget.
It wouldn't have been a good look.
And so it always made sense that whether he was decided or not prior to the budget being announced, that he would wait for the announcement. But now that it's over, is there any other reason to build the artificial suspense of his decision beyond him maybe just not being decided yet?
No. Well, I listened to the words he said when he was here. He said he was going to make this decision in the next couple of weeks. It is that time.
He has like a pros and cons list, like a whiteboard, and every day he adds something to it.
Yeah. Well, I went back and listened to the interview. I think the cons for him, we talked about age, remember? He's 73.
I think it's just like, do you have the interest in continuing to fight these battles? Because it is a role, the executive position is my interpretation of it, is the buck always stops with you. You can't make everyone happy. You're always disappointing someone, even though you might be the most well-intentioned as far as trying to get the best deal done, make the most people happy. But you're always dealing with someone who is unhappy with you.
Sure.
And at 73, I wouldn't want to be doing that anymore either. I don't want to be dealing with people's BS. I want to go retire and travel and be on a beach.
Let me
drink a Mai Tai. Ice cream.
Or banana daiquiri. Let me give you my old guy perspective. What I don't like about the fact that if he does decide not to run, it gives Dan Schaefer and others this powerful feeling that, yes, we are going to bring in young people. And they're going to fix everything. To say someone is too old, I get the argument, but it is rather ageist when the person you're talking about is actually highly performing at the job he has. If he was, let's compare him to Joe Biden. Joe Biden had a lot of questions, could not perform on a main stage. Wasn't popular. That's not Tony Evers. Whatever you think about the policy, set it aside. He shows up. He's all over the state. He He's saying the right things. At least if you're a Democrat, he's saying the right things that you want to hear. He's instituted policies. He has done a lot of great things in the state of Wisconsin. I know people don't like to admit that if they're not
a Republican admitting that.
Yeah, but I think it's important that we do that. So I don't want the knuckleheads who just push people up because of age to think they won something. You won nothing. You don't know who you're getting next. So that part irritates the hell out of me. And I know that's what's going to happen if and when he decides.
Well,
not
do you
to
think
run.
That could be part of this as far as whatever backdoor, like backroom politics is potentially happening as far as setting the stage for who's going to be running next?
I don't know. Maybe it's let's look at a different situation. We had Joseph Pecky and Deborah Remicker running for the state chair. Joe's older than Deborah.
Oh, did you talk about that with Matt on Monday?
I think so. Yeah.
Devin Remicker praying that Tony Evers. What a,
yeah.
A weird line.
It is a weird line. But there's a younger man, Devin. I think he's in his 20s, right?
I think he's like early 30s.
Early 30s. Joe in his 40s.
Early 40s.
They chose the young guy. So I mean,
I don't think age had anything to do with that. That has a 10-year age difference. Are you kidding me? That's not what we're talking about.
Maybe
as far
Joe,
as someone
maybe
who's
Joe looks older than he is.
Versus most of the people who I would say are on the short list.
You're missing
for the
my
Democratic
point completely.
Bench.
It's the young, refreshing ideas of someone who's 30 years old. It doesn't matter if Joe's only 10 years older. He's not 30.
That's not the same.
It's exactly what
it's
people
not,
like Schaefer
no,
are saying. It's these new
73
ideas.
73 versus 43 is an age difference.
You're getting hung up on the age difference. That's not the point.
But it's not the same. Joe Zepecki and Devin Remicker are not, like, no one's looking at their age difference as a difference in why they were voting for one or the other. But it's just a bad comparison.
No, it's not a bad comparison because what Devin Remicker represents
is the establishment of the Democratic Party.
Is the young, refreshing
no, it's not.
Voice. Yes, it is. Joseph Pecky was qualified.
That is not, you
do you
really
agree with me that Joseph Pecky was
race? If that's what you think he was running on, he was running on the fact that he'd been in part of the party and it ran was under
let's
Ben.
Let's be brutally
and
honest.
If everything was as part of the establishment, Joe was running as the outsider.
Let's be honest.
Voice.
Let's be honest with ourselves. Devin got handed that position.
That's what I mean
by
that's
his boss,
by the establishment. So
yes.
I think that you're using something that is totally different.
I'm not talking about how the establishment is viewing it. I'm talking about how the voters are viewing it, and all these young Dems who want this refreshing new person and new ideas. That's what they see.
But Joe ran as that.
I don't think Joe is that. Joe is very much a traditional Democrat. He's been in the process for decades, even though he's only in his 40s. He's worked in Washington. He's a very much a traditionalist, even though sometimes he disagrees radically with what people think.
I just don't think it's the same as talking about Democrats who are in their 70s and if not 80s.
So you agree
continuing
that,
to run?
You agree that Evers should be forced
to Joe,
out?
Who's 43.
You think Evers should be forced out?
No, of course not. I don't think he should be forced out.
Do you think Evers is the best bet for Democrats in this race?
Best bet, yes.
Then he should run.
Everything else is you don't know.
Then he should run.
Well, if he doesn't want to run, that's where this becomes a personal decision.
That's the only thing. Text from the 414. Good for Tony. He's 73. We can't be running the geriatrics into the ground. That's ageist. Part of the problem with American politics is elections never end. It's like 15 months before the next election. That's a good point. This stuff never ends. Here's another one. Evers has no energy and very boring. He's a very laid-back dude. But again, he got stuff done as a governor. Even Republicans like me admit that. And he won elections at a time when, God, Republicans told us they couldn't win. They can't win. We're going to beat them. They didn't beat them. Twice. I don't think they beat him the third time either. That's the reality in Wisconsin. She's Chris and I'm Steve. Point taken. Just getting warmed up on this Thursday. How about that? Real quick. Yes, I understand Kristen is more closely allied with Democrats. So she's got. I'm gonna make my points. Am I supposed to just concede everything to her? Come on, people. Be smarter than that. All right, we forgot
even
to get...
Even if your point is wrong.
That's what you said.
You can die on that
That's
bill.
What she said. No, not even the right context. All right, so our favorites. Mine's Crowley.
Mine's also David Crowley.
Yeah.
I think the field will be full. I think it's certainly... My guess of who jumps in if there is an open seat. Attorney General Josh Call, Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez, Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley, State Senator Kelda Royce...
Did you say Godlewski?
I don't know if Godlewski runs or not.
Doesn't she run for everything, pretty much?
She ran for Senate.
Mm-hmm.
What else did she run for?
I think she was thinking about, she was speculated about as running, but she didn't run.
Again, conjecture, speculation.
Makes the world go around.
I certainly think those four, and then I think there's some wild cards. You got Chris Larson, who likes to run for anything that besides the seat that he has. Cavalier Johnson, mayor of Milwaukee. Tom Nelson could come out of the woodwork again after running for Senate for 3 years ago.
Chris Larson's never going to be governor of the state of Wisconsin.
No, I'm just saying, but was he ever going to be senator? He ran for that. He also was in the special election for a hot second for mayor. And now, who knows? Maybe then we're missing some totally, because like back, I wasn't here, but back in for the race in 2018, was Tony Evers on anyone's radar as potential when it was like 18 candidates?
That's so many years ago now. It all bleeds together. I don't know.
I not being here, I don't know if he came into the race as a front runner.
Yeah, I think it'll be just wild if we have just completely open race both sides.
So that must have been after Jim Doyle retired, was the last time there was no incumbent.
I'm going to Google it during the break.
All right.
We don't have time to get set. We're going to play. I had a great interview with Packers president Mark Murphy that we're going to release on Monday on the Spidiology podcast. We'll play it at some point today. It's him talking about retirement, just like the governor maybe talking about retirement. So he was fantastic. We are teasing a lot of that. You heard a lot of it on the morning show today as well. Next half hour, we got a lot of interesting stuff to talk about today. We were going to have a guest. We moved the guest to next week. But Shane Gillis showed up at the ESPYs last night. Was, I thought, brilliant, offending everyone in the right way. I thought
not everyone agrees that it was the right way,
and I don't care about that, as you know. I just thought that it was a very sort of really smart way to do it, and it's sort of typical of Shane Gillis. He I don't think he cares either.
Oh, definitely not.
Does he drink?
Yes. He was in the Bud Light commercial.
I know he was
Super
in a commercial,
Bowl.
But is he a drinker?
I mean, if you look at that body. Do you not think that man throws back some beers?
I think he drinks some beer. This is from the 262 from Wendy. Great job, Kristen and Steve, though don't get yelling at each other. We're not really yelling. We're very demonstrative. That's the point. Wendy thinks it's a turnoff. Well, we're not trying to turn you on, Wendy. We're just trying to entertain you and hopefully educate on some level.
I should preface that. When Steve and I get loud, we go to commercial and we're totally fine.
Yeah. So she gave you the win, although she said I did stick with facts. I don't. Wendy's sort of picking both of us. Texture says Mark Murphy for governor.
Oh, there you go.
He's got other plans, which are significant, which kind of surprised me when I found out.
You'll be able to listen to. When does the podcast come out?
Monday morning, here at WTMJ.com or wherever you get your podcasts. About a half hour interview with soon to be retired Packers president Mark Murphy. He's retiring officially.
There's age limits on that job, isn't
70,
there?
70, yeah.
So we're okay with the Packers having age limits, but politicians, no?
Private organization. Sorta. I'll let that play a while. It's some good music. You know what this is, right?
I don't.
The warm-up. Come on. Did you take all the music out, all the lyrics out of this thing? Oh, it's just
this was already in the system.
All right, so Rolling Stones.
Oh, okay.
Street Fighting Man.
Yeah. Great song, by the way. Saw it live. Awesome. All right, so full disclosure. Occasionally, we'll talk about things that you and I had not watched the entire program that was presented.
I watched it.
Did you watch the ESPYs?
I didn't watch the whole ESPYs, no.
No.
But I watched Shane Gillis' monologue.
Yeah,
Mike and I saw Superman last night. It was very fun.
Really? We'll have to talk about that later.
But on the way home, because I opened my text, and we had texts from one Bill McCashin.
Yeah.
Who was very excited about
pointing
some of the
us
jokes.
In the direction
yeah,
of the
was very
the
excited
ESPYs.
About. He was not familiar with Shane Gillis' work. He's like, who's this Shane Gillis guy? I like him.
Did he not watch the Super Bowl? I mean, he was in a commercial.
I don't know. You know, there's a lot of pop culture references that not all of us get. There's people that exist.
Do they not mention it on Twitter, which is Bill's news source? What's going on there?
Doesn't matter.
All right.
And so Mike and I went and watched it. And, you know, the guy pushed the envelope.
Shane Gillis.
Yes, which is what.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm pretty sure the people who hired him to do that were not surprised that this is what he and his writing team came up with.
So the description I'm reading at Daily Mail, and there's multiple sources are all covering the same story, is that I don't think he stunned the audience. I think they would, how would you not go to anything now and not expect an Epstein joke I mean, that's like the start
of... Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know if the Epstein
joke... You're more worried about the Caitlin Clark.
Well, So I don't think... I actually think the Epstein joke, as we're realizing in real time across political parties, is the one thing that can bring everyone together right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, sort of amazing.
And so I feel like this is probably his most universal joke that everyone was like, yeah. A lot of his other jokes we can get into, but this was his joke on... Epstein.
Actually, there was supposed to be an Epstein joke here, but as it got deleted, must have probably deleted itself, right? Probably never existed, actually. Let's move on as a country and ignore that.
I think that's funny.
I don't think that's the controversial joke.
No.
I mean, there's been tons of Epstein jokes over the years.
Yeah, he's not, and he's also not wrong.
This was the joke that I think has some people, because this is, you have to, the reference or the background for Shane Gillis is, if you don't know who this is, he is, I forgot where he's from. He's from the Midwest somewhere.
Isn't he Kansas City, Missouri?
Maybe.
Somewhere?
And he was originally a couple years back, handful of years back, hired to be on SNL, and then... After the announcement of him getting hired, there was like the sleuths on the internet found some, I think it was like Chinese jokes or something. They found something that was like, and SNL was like, all right, we're not going to deal with this. Like his humor.
He's actually a Pennsylvania guy.
Pennsylvania, there you go. So then he was let go from the team, and then he continued to have a pretty meteoric rise with his comedy career, despite not being on SNL, so much so that he was now, I think, hosted SNL twice. His humor is, it certainly pushes the envelope. He gets looped in with MAGA stuff, but he's not really MAGA. Like, I would say, if you actually listen to most of his, he kind of just makes fun of everyone, which is what I think good comics do.
Also self-deprecating.
From his point of view. He had an uncle with Down syndrome, and he has some jokes about that as someone who also has an uncle with Down syndrome. I will say they are spot on.
Yeah, they're perfect.
Really funny. But he's not for everyone. Let's put it that way. And so the joke, along with some others, but I think the joke that is getting the most pushback, which I actually don't think is that good of a joke. His next joke is a much better one. So we'll play the audio for the controversial one, and then I'll read the joke that I actually think is better.
When Caitlin Clark retires from the WNBA, she's going to work at a Waffle House so she can continue doing what she loves most, fist fighting black women.
A lot of people not liking that joke.
Why don't they like it?
I think it taps into a lot of the drama that's happening in the WNBA period right now, as far as this media story is of you buy into it. They're targeting.
I don't buy into it. I believe I'm right on it. And I believe a lot of other people are right on it as well, saying the same thing.
The WNBA is just also a really tough league. Like, if you watch some of the brawls these women get in with that don't involve Caitlin Clark at all, like, they fight a lot. They fight way more than the NBA.
Yeah. So I guess
LeBron couldn't last a day in the WNBA.
So what's the point of that? That's, you want like a UFC/WNBA?
No, it's just their tough broads.
So when someone's going down a court who is a skilled basketball player, you agree with that, right?
Yes.
Probably more than most other WNBA players. Not all, but most.
Yeah,
including
she's really
good. Including some of the ones that get a lot of attention, who have massive...
Who gets a lot of attention that's not good?
Not in the way that Caitlin Clark is good? A woman named Reese?
Angel Reese is very good.
She's a good defensive player. She sucks on offense. I watch the games. She can't make a shot to save her life. She's a great rebounder. Would never argue that. One of the best in the WNBA. So I do know the WNBA. But the problem is, when you watch the games, when you actually watch the games, Caitlin Clark is not involved in the play, and somebody decides to just go after her, which has nothing to do with basketball. Those are not basketball plays. That's what I think Americans, people who watch the sport, are concerned about. And the fact that there's other weird thing. The fact that some people don't like that she's the most popular player, even though she's one of the newer players in the WNBA. Not that some of the other, the Sue Birds and others, haven't developed that league. They've done the work. They've done the heavy lifting when it wasn't as popular. There's a lot of dislike for Caitlin because of what she represents.
Without going down the Caitlin Clark rabbit hole, you're pointing out all the things of why there is conversation and dialogue happening around the WNBA. Some of it is racial. And so there's a lot of people who don't like that joke. And I don't know. She also doesn't fist fight people. Like, there's not...
She doesn't, no. But people try to beat her up.
There's pushing and stuff like that.
Yeah.
The other joke that we don't have the clip for, and I think this is just a better joke as far as how it's written, is where to go. He says, I have some things in common with the Fever with Caitlin Clark.
Yeah, this one.
We're both whites from the Midwest who have nailed a bunch of threes.
I thought that was funny.
See, that's a funny joke because it's self-deprecating towards him. And it's also a play on words as far as a three-pointer versus ranking how women look.
Why do you think that one's not getting the attention that the other ones are getting?
Because
I think it's actually
the other one's more clickbaity because it's racial.
Yeah.
It's more infuriating to people who are following the racism that is happening inside of the WNBA and like the goons this conversation around Caitlin Clark has brought to the WNBA. Because that's a whole other topic that we could probably either do a You Need to Listen podcast on or talk about here is the amount of abusive language that has been introduced in the WNBA that wasn't there before. One is because it's increased popularity, but it's also because like sports betting. And so now people are making bets on sports. And we've seen that across every sport as far as fans or, bettors entitlement of like verbally assaulting players because they lost money, which is insane. But anyways,
I think that joke was the best of the three.
I think that was the best joke of the three. I think people should relax.
Lighten up.
This is like Ricky Gervais. I mean, Nikki Glaser had some pretty dark jokes when she was at the Emmys last year. So it's like, this is what these people are hired to do. They're hired to make noise and say some shocking jokes. So people like us the next day are all talking about the awards ceremony.
We're going to move on, but I love this text because it says what I'm agreeing with me. Angel Reese leads the league in rebounds because she's rebounding her own missed shots. You nailed it. I watched the games. That's exactly what's happening. Take a quick break here on Point Taken.
Welcome back to Point Taken. I'm Kristen Bry. He's Steve's Katie. What are you chuckling about?
Just the conversations we have during the break.
That is not relevant at all to what we're about to talk about.
So I saw this headline this morning, and we didn't spend a lot of time talking about this in our pre-show, but the headline, the story written by Dan Bice, who I've interviewed, you probably interviewed him as well, Lawrence Andrea from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, which is the name of the paper for those who are confused. The headline is, the Trump administration signals it is bypassing, that's the key word, Wisconsin senators in key judicial selections. So as Bill McCoshin filled us in on, the two senators actually agreed on a pool of candidates to fill.
Look at that.
I mean, that was a spirit of bipartisanship. The Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals opening. And they sent the president a list of names, and apparently he interviewed some of them. But the administration's saying, hold on. We don't necessarily like any of your nominees.
Do you know any of the people who were, are you familiar with any of the people who were on their list?
I don't really
know the judicial landscape.
Well, I do know Luke Burke because I've interviewed him. Wisconsin's for Law and Liberty.
Okay.
Great smarts. I don't know the Madison lawyer. I don't know U.S. Attorney Matthew Krieger. Daniel Suhr, I've heard of. President of the Center for American Rights. Everybody's probably eminently qualified. I'm totally going like gossip, speculation.
Going to full TMZ?
Yeah.
Okay.
Full TMZ. And often they're right, as much as they get blown up a lot. I think this could be one of those weird things where the president says, just think about what he knows about Wisconsin. Who's been getting a lot of attention in the last few years? Jennifer Doyle, right? Waukesha County Judge?
But that was a couple years ago now. I mean,
yeah.
She really
hasn't stayed
in the news after she didn't make it out of the primary.
Right, but she did run.
Yeah. Did run.
Yeah. And then the other one is somebody we have talked about, current Justice Rebecca Bradley, who apparently is not raising anything for a race that she would probably need a lot of money for next year to hold that seat for conservatives and herself. Maybe it's one of those two. Maybe Trump just throws a wild card at him and said, I appreciate all the hard work you did, Tammy and Ron. I understand we should say senator, but I'm just speaking in the way that the president speaks, because he's never going to give him that credit, whether he likes him or not. And he says, I'm going to do my own thing. And he picks one of those two. What do you think about that speculation?
I think it's
bad.
I think it's more likely if that were to happen, I think that Rebecca Bradley.
Of the two, yes.
Of the two, I think is.
But not totally out of question.
It is interesting because I don't think I was here when those numbers came out as far as the fact that she has not raised any money.
Zero.
That says about her intentions. I have to imagine she's an ambitious enough woman that she's not just going to do nothing. And so who knows what the conversations have been as far as potential. Well, you also found an interesting tidbit about salary.
Thanks for bringing that up. Now I got to find it real quick. All right. So not that money's everything, but I looked up the current salary for a Wisconsin Supreme Court justice, $185K. Not bad. The salary, though, for a justice on the 7th District Court of Appeals, $262K. A little bit of a...
a lot more.
Spike, a little bump.
Yeah.
Not that money's everything, and I don't know what Justice Bradley's, you know, financial situation is. I'm not saying she needs money, but it does seem odd that somebody who's got the one of the biggest races of her life next year... not showing up at some events that typically she would have shown up at. And I got an early word on that a couple months ago. Like, she should be here, but she's not, with very little warning. No, you know, notice ahead of time. And zero, not small, like we were just talking about with the governor, no money raised. That suggests, now, I don't know what the legality of having a conversation between the administration and a current sitting justice on the Wisconsin Supreme Court about an open seat would be. I have no idea. Maybe our legal friends at some point will tell us.
They're probably doing it in a signal chat anyways. Fine.
They're probably, yeah. I just think it's fascinating.
It is interesting.
So early speculation, and that's all it is. I have no idea. It could be somebody, an outlier. Maybe Rick Essenberg is going to dust off his attorney skills and justice skills. What do you think? No.
All right. No.
Less likely?
Less likely.
All right. Got to take another break. We're yammering so much on the Point Taken first hour. We got a really good second hour, too. A senator might stop by. How about that?
Sources say.
And we're just sort of talking about her.
Yeah.
Coming up, Point Taken. I don't know why this struck me, but I saw this headline, and apparently the president was talking about it. The president of the United States, Donald J. Trump, wants Coca-Cola to get rid of...
Corn syrup
and use sugar cane instead. Now, the only state I think, maybe not the only, but the main producer of sugar cane in the country is Florida, which mm-hmm. he's got a great relationship with because he lives there, Mar-a-Lago, and knows the governor very well. What do you used to call him? Ron the Sanctimonious? Is that what he used to call him? Now they're buds, apparently.
I think
apparently.
He tried out a bunch of different nicknames.
Yeah, he loves the nicknames he does. So he wants them to use sugar cane. Here's the weird thing, though. He doesn't drink regular Coke. He drinks Diet Coke, which doesn't have either of those things.
I think this is probably a RFK thing, don't you think? Do you think he really cares whether it's corn or sugar?
Here's what I care about. Replacing high fructose corn syrup, produced mainly in Iowa and a lot of Midwestern states because we grow corn, would cost thousands of American food manufacturing jobs, depress farm income, and boost imports of foreign sugar, all with no nutritional benefit.
I think it tastes better, though, doesn't it?
Sugar cane?
Isn't that what people talk about, like, Mexican, when you can buy a bottle of Mexican Coke, because they make it with sugar instead of...
What about the jobs?
I don't know. This is probably a different topic for a longer segment, because I think there's something to be said. We could make this argument about a lot of industries.
I'm fighting for you, Iowa. Remember that on this show, on this day, I'm fighting for you, even though I don't live in this state, and I've only driven through it a few times. Chris and Steve, Point Taken, hour two after the news.
Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Braun.
Hello, hello. Welcome back to the 11 o'clock hour of Point Taken. And we are very excited to be having our next guest with us for the next 15 minutes. Very excited. Fresh
Let's
off
do it.
Of a... very early morning rescission bill vote. Senator Tammy Baldwin, welcome to Point Taken.
It's great to join you. I'm not sure I'm fresh off of
yes, I don't know if you slept last night.
2:15 a.m. vote, but I'm doing my best.
So actually, let's start there because it was this morning voted that the $9 billion DOGE cuts with foreign aid and public broadcasting cuts were codified. And so I also just saw on The Hill a headline that says GOP airs concerns about Trump's use of rare tool to cut funds despite backing bill. So in your conversations that are not on the floor, that are just with your colleagues on the other side of the aisle right now, how much concern do you hear from them versus that doesn't reflect how they're actually voting?
Yeah. Well, certainly, especially with regard to some of the public media provisions in this rescissions bill, I heard a lot of concern about especially those who represent states with big swaths of rural areas that public media is how they get their emergency alerts, how they get local news. And we've seen so many local news outlets close in recent years. We have some counties now in Wisconsin. We have one that has no local news source at all. And we have some public media that are reaching, you know, most of Wisconsin's North Woods, for example, even some of the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. Without those, if those radio stations, for example, were to close, to shut down, there would be no source for weather alerts, amber alerts, and local news content. And so people are very concerned about that. I had a lot of Republican colleagues talk about that off the floor, on the floor, but not willing to stand up and vote to eliminate these rescissions. And so, you know, I offered them a chance. I offered an amendment that would have saved the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which is the vehicle through which these local radio and public television stations receive some of their funding.
Senator, one of the big questions is what this does to health care. We've heard a lot of conversation about rural hospitals, and certainly that matters for much of rural Wisconsin. What are your specific concerns in that area? Because that's something that impacts everyone day to day in this state.
Yeah, so in that budget reconciliation bill, there's a projection that the consequences of passage of that legislation will result nationally in 17 million people losing their health care. Some of those people receive their health care through, like, Badger Care, Medicaid. Others will lose their health care because of changes in policy with regard to the Affordable Care Act and the lapsing of tax credits that help people afford the premiums. And that combination in Wisconsin will result in more than 270,000 Wisconsinites losing their health care coverage. That has downstream consequences. So if rural hospitals and clinics are increasingly then treating people who are uninsured, their bottom line is impacted. We have a significant percentage of our rural hospitals in Wisconsin that are operating year to year at a loss. This will compound it and will probably make their continuing operation really in doubt. We know already that there are three rural hospitals in Wisconsin teetering on the edge. This bill is going to make it worse. And we'll also see other changes in behavior with regard to rural hospitals and clinics. They'll stop providing the services that are the least profitable. We've seen way too many maternity wards close because those tend to be those do not tend to be profit centers for our rural hospitals. And we've seen mental health services shuttered because of the same economics. And so, again, a lot of ramifications of this bill on the health and well-being of Wisconsinites.
So it's interesting, though, because a lot of the Medicaid changes don't start until January of 2027, correct?
That is correct in terms of some of the reporting and red tape that will be put up. But, you know, there's still basically $1 trillion being taken out of the Medicaid program over a time horizon of 10 years. And we will see ramifications, I think, earlier than that. And especially worrisome to so many of the Wisconsinites I was interacting with during the consideration of this bill. By the way, I did roughly a dozen Medicaid roundtables from Superior to Racine and from La Crosse to Green Bay. I mean, I just crisscrossed the state listening to folks. And one of the things that people are very concerned about are with the Medicaid, what they call Medicaid waiver programs. These are programs that allow, say, a very sick child or somebody with complex medical and disabilities receive both health care and ancillary services that connect them to that health care and keep them well and functioning in our communities. they're really worried that some of the things on the early chopping block will be those ancillary services that just really make it possible for people to live independently outside of nursing care or hospital care. And there's a lot of worry right now about that.
Senator Tammy Baldwin joining us on Point Taken on 620 WTMJ. One of the things that our other senator in the state of Wisconsin, Senator Ron Johnson, talked about for decades was the deficit. Now, he sort of moved away from that conversation and supported this bill, even though it had what I would call serious impact on our federal deficit. I guess my question for you is, how much do you think about when you're working on this bill, you're talking to your colleagues, you're talking to people across the aisle about that number, which we know is getting into the 30s of trillions of dollars? How much does that figure into what you're thinking about day to day?
Yeah, it's a huge concern. And look, the last election was litigated about the high cost of things. And really voters were saying, you got to bring our costs down. You got to bring our healthcare costs down, our grocery costs down, our energy costs down. And we're seeing a whole bunch of activities by Republicans in this administration that are doing just the opposite. And in this particular bill, one of the reasons why government expenses have gone up is the interest on the debt. Interest rates have gone up. The debt has gone up because of the Trump administration's previous tax bill in 2017 and decreasing revenues and therefore increasing deficit and debt. And this only makes it worse by the tune of, by some estimates, $3.5 trillion in additional debt to our nation over the next 10 years. And so when I saw our Senate's deficit hawks, as they call themselves, turn over and vote for this bill, it was just truly shocking, especially given the fact that a couple of them said, there's no way we're voting for this bill because it adds to the deficit. And only when it got worse did they then say, oh, now we're going to vote for it. This is really ridiculous, and it should be of concern to everyone that we should not be giving enormous tax breaks to the wealthiest among us and profitable corporations to balloon the deficit. We should be much more fiscally responsible than this bill is.
Senator, that's my follow-up question as far as I wouldn't consider you a deficit hawk, but as far as it being something that you are concerned about, what are the policies that you see us course correcting to get out of this debt? Is it raising taxes on the wealthiest and the profitable corporations?
Certainly, we should have everybody pay their fair share. And this bill did just the opposite. The greatest benefit of the tax provisions in this bill will inure to the benefit of profitable corporations and the wealthiest among us. There are a modest number of tax provisions that are claimed to be helpful for the middle class. Most of those, by the way, expire in just a couple of years. But the other measures affecting and benefiting billionaires and profitable corporations are made permanent in our tax code. This is going to continue to spiral in a way that is harmful. And what do they want to do to pay for that? They want to cut more from the most vulnerable people in our communities. People who do rely on tax credits to pay their premiums for the Affordable Care Act insurance, people who are on Medicaid, people who have benefited from nutrition assistance programs like the SNAP program. That's who they're cutting in order to pay for tax breaks for billionaires and big corporations. And that is just ridiculous.
Senator, I only got about a minute left, but I wanted to ask you this question. The big story in Wisconsin is, both looking forward and today, there's some speculation the governor may not run for re-election. It would be his third run. I know you're a fan of the governor. You've been around the state with him many, many times. Do you think he should run? And do you know anything about the fact that he might not run?
So I don't have any inside information, but
I knew she was going to say that.
I want to say something that's really connected to the conversation we just had, because the state budget was unfolding as we were debating this budget reconciliation bill. And in the final hours, Governor Evers negotiated really strong language that will help Wisconsin be able to work with some of these rural hospitals and clinics to keep them potentially open where the budget reconciliation bill would pressure them to close. And I am so grateful for the governor's leadership in that regard.
All right. Well, we got lots more questions, so we're going to have you back. But Senator Tammy Baldwin, thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thank you for having me.
All right. The time is 11:20. We'll be back with Jeremy Janine on Point Taken after this.
Thanks for tuning in to Point Taken on this Thursday. This week is sailing by. Thanks to Governor of the State of Wisconsin, one of the governors.
The Senator?
Senator for the State of Wisconsin, Tammy Baldwin, for joining us. Whenever you have an elected official, you always want more time.
And I know.
And we can't control how long they speak generally, and we could interrupt. But, I mean, these are big decisions that are being made in Washington, D.C., and I think it's important because we do that on this show, that we hear from both sides, and she certainly represents one side of the political aisle. And she had a lot of, I think, smart comments about what the impact of these bills will be for the state of Wisconsin and people who live here. So we thanks to the junior senator from the state of Wisconsin, Tammy Baldwin, for joining us.
How often do you think her and Ron Johnson talk?
It's a great question. I would hope that they must talk occasionally.
I feel like it's more than we think.
It always is. Every time I've seen these sort of these, what the public sees as bitter conflicts between the two sides in a state, it's always never as bad as it seems.
They're not that confident. Like, at least publicly, they're not. No. They're not like Mark Pocan and Derek Van Orden.
Did you see that exchange yesterday?
Oh, gosh,
we got to talk about that. They were outside of Congress, and then they were doing a TV interview, and then Derek Van Orden basically comes up and starts going after Mark Pocan with all these accusations back and forth. It was nuts. Now, they don't like each other.
They do not like each other.
Which is a whole other story. All right, we got to take another quick break here. We'll come back. Jeremy Janine's going to jump in. He's been very patient as we worked our way through the hour. We'll get to that. He's got about 11 topics. We'll do our best on this Thursday. He's coming up next after this. I want to be closer, yeah, absolutely. Kristen Bryce, Steve Scafidi on Point Taken, 640 WTMJ. We always talk to him on Thursdays, unless he's off. You have an off day coming up pretty soon.
In late August, I'm planning ahead.
Oh, is it that far ahead?
Yeah.
Thanks for an early notice.
Yeah, I'm a gentleman and a scholar.
That's why you're good at your job. So Jeremy Janine, UrbanMilwaukee.com is where you can find his great writing, all things Milwaukee, politics and more. Let's start with a fun one. Summerfest, numbers up.
Absolutely. They're up 8%. Before we even go there, I want to pause because it's my favorite Thursday of the year. It's my favorite run of the year, and Kristen's husband organizes it.
Yes.
Did you guys pre-plan
this? No,
we did not. He's taking it over. But Storm the Bastille is tonight downtown.
It's a great event. It's just awesome.
I will be there this weekend. I unfortunately cannot run tonight because I've managed to hurt myself. Me and injuries and running are a thing that go well together. But come out, Storm the Bastille. No rain. I don't think it's ever rained on that event.
My mom's going to be there with a birthday sash on, so you can wish Debbie Bry a happy
birthday.
How cool
is that? Mm-hmm. Will she have a beignet for her birthday?
Oh, probably.
Yeah, that's...
But you can run through downtown streets at 9 p.m.
It's cool.
The police won't even chase you. They'll wave you on.
They're blocking off the streets for you.
In my insider tip, when you go by the public market, when you're going south and coming back north, people will be handing out beer. Look for those people. That's free beer. That's free advice right there.
Free beer, always a winner. So will you'll be running in this race?
Not tonight, unfortunately.
What's your injury?
I managed to hurt my hips a lot.
This youngster with his bad hip already. Come on. That's going to be a lifetime of regret. Trust me. You want to race every race you can get in. All right. So, Summerfest.
Summerfest. Up 8% on the year. That's good news. Except it's still below the 2023 totals. And then the big question is always, well, what was it in 2015? Or that one year when Imagine Dragons caused the gates to just completely overblow. And it's less than that. Mm-hmm. And the reason why is because Summerfest is now 9 days instead of 11 days or 10 days. So a little bit of apples to oranges comparison, but 602,000 visitors. Kristen, Steve, and myself were all in that mix.
Yes.
I mean, Steve bought lots of beers at one point.
I did. For myself. And others.
8% up from last year, but last year was a 10% drop from the year prior. I'm not going to try and do that kind of comparative math on the year, but like who's paying for Summerfest, who's not paying. Approximately 20% of the visitors are using one of the admission promotions, donate food to this charity to get in for free.
That's a great mix to me. And I've heard people complain about both complain and the opposite, that just pay your money and get in. No, it's a great mix. You're providing a service for people who don't maybe have the cash to, you know, what is, I don't know what the ticket price is now. It's like
25?
It's somewhere.
It's a big number. And they get to go and enjoy it, and they can decide what they want to eat and drink. You don't have to spend a lot if you don't want to. You can walk around all free music if you just do the regular stages. I think it's a great thing that Summerfest does. My question, though, is, and I was going to send this to CEO Sarah, why don't they add in one Sunday? Make it 10 days. One Sunday of the three.
Every year when I look at the schedule, I'm like, oh, that's the Sunday. And I'm like, nope.
Yeah, give me a Sunday.
It's a weekend festival that's Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And I would really like that Sunday.
My question. So it obviously is financially benefiting Summerfest.
Hold that thought because we got to get to news.
All right. I think it's an important question.
I keep cutting her off this morning. Not on purpose.
The clock is the clock.
The clock never goes away. We have to honor the clock. All right, so Jeremy and Jeannie are going to stick around for the next half hour. Jeremy Janine joining us as he does every Thursday here on Point Taken. Kristen and Steve, hope you're having a great day. Thanks for finding us wherever you find us over there online. Podcast, Point Taken Podcast, the number one podcast at WTMJ. I just say that. I have no idea if it is or not. But
it's up there.
It's up there.
I mean, I don't think we beat the Brewers.
No, the sports stuff always wins.
I'm
talking about the shows. It's a clear choice. I mean, let's be honest. All right, Jeremy Janine, you had a question.
No, I had a question about Summerfest. All right, so a lot of locals still hate the 3-weekend lineup for Summerfest instead of the 11-day consecutive days. And so you were saying that it's apples and oranges to compare numbers of attendance when it was 11 days versus 9 days. But do the economics obviously are making sense for Summerfest, despite lower attendance numbers, that the dollars make sense to keep it in this 3-weekend format, even though there's a lot of people who say they don't like it?
I think yes, but comments have kind of come out, and then I talked to people familiar with the event. Yes, but not in the ways we expect. So one of the things Summerfest said they really liked was the ability to kind of breathe and reset each week.
Okay.
So they might be spending, like, they're not doing maintenance at 6 a.m. anymore. They have a whole week to just kind of rebuild, reorient. I think that's a positive for them. There's also the question of how much, okay, the attendance is lower, but how much beer are you buying on a Tuesday night versus a Saturday night? So if you add an extra Saturday night, Steve's out there getting a couple extra High Lifes.
Exactly.
Fewer people through the door, better margin.
Okay.
There's also the thing to consider of booking artists. They've talked a lot about it's easier to book artists on the weekends. The touring artists, they're just set up to, I want to be somewhere on the weekend. Maybe I go back home. I don't know what a music artist's life is like, but it's apparently easier to book them. So maybe the pricing is better. They don't disclose that. And then the one thing I'm really interested in Summerfest, and I've never been able to get anyone to confirm this other than to hint at it, is booking certain artists can really influence your beer sales, and people have winked.
Oh, this is not, because we went to Benson Boone. I don't know if I talked about this in our air or not. Unbelievable show. Show was sold out, but since a lot of his target audience is 14-year-old girls, the beer lines were empty compared to, my husband went to the Killers the previous week. And there were, the line was never short of 40 people. And so that was an interesting thing to me as far as who do you book that draws a demographic that's also going to be buying beer and drinks.
And that's, we've talked a lot on the show about like closing breweries and changing demographic trends. Younger people just aren't drinking as much beer. That's going to be a challenge for Summerfest. That's going to continue forward when those 14-year-olds turn 21 and those 21-year-olds now turn 28. That they're drinking less beer, less alcohol than people before them, that's going to be a challenge Summerfest will have to navigate.
Yeah. The rise of NA, you know, non-alcoholic. My wife had a non-alcoholic drink at Summerfest. She loved it.
NA beer is good. NA wine, not so much.
I'm not an expert on that. I like the regular wine, as you know. All right, so what else we got on your plate?
Well, let's jump on over to trampolines, which is something the Common Council bounced off of. I beat this one to death in the I should be fair. Alderman Peter Burgelis, his whole goal was to prevent death. He got a call from a constituent with a photo was attached to this email that someone had put up a trampoline next to this person's picket fence. So,
wow.
Neighbors put up a trampoline, property owner had a picket fence. Alderman, can you do something? And he went looking, and the answer is no, there's no city ordinance that prevents that. So he attempted to create one. And he drew some attention to it, which I think made it, instead of this quiet thing that has passed, all of a sudden it became this discussion point and shows up on Point Taken, and every news outlet in town all of a sudden was talking about it. Well, the Common Council on Tuesday ultimately rejected it, said, no, this isn't something we want to do. First, they fought about the fines. Should it be up to $300, up to $500? They lowered it down to $100 maximum, $50 minimum. And that actually caused someone to jump off because Scott Spiker didn't think that was enough of a fine to matter. Like, why are we regulating something that didn't have enough of a penalty? But Bergelis wanted to do this safety thing. His colleagues wanted to make lots of jokes about jumping and bouncing, and the media members, myself included, also jumped in on that. But it was rejected. I think it got 5 out of the 15 votes.
Okay.
So no trampoline regulations in Milwaukee. But there was a clear, even the people that were saying no are saying, hey, use common sense, and this should be between you and your insurance company.
Yeah, if I see a picket fence, which usually means you have sharp little yes. panels in the fence, you probably don't want to locate your trampoline right immediately adjacent to it.
Common sense.
Common sense.
But as they often say, you can't fix stupid. I said it. Not you. All right, where are we moving to next? We're going to take a break here? Quick break? Give us more time next segment. Let's do that.
All right.
Jerry Maginine, we got to catch up to the clock. At some point, the clock wins, always. All right, Chris and Steve, Point Taken. In the city, Kristen Bryce, Steve Scafidi, we're on Wisconsin Avenue, downtown Milwaukee. In the city, that is Milwaukee. Going out over our airwaves across the state of Wisconsin and beyond. I know there's a lot of listeners in the Chicago area, so I appreciate each and every one of you as well.
I actually think we have an Iowa listener, too. I had someone email me from Iowa.
It's amazing.
He's from Wisconsin, but he lives in Iowa.
That is the difference. That's why
I don't think we reach there, but I think he streams it.
On some days, you'd be surprised. Mm-hmm. UP all over the UP.
Biggest That's stick Iowa, in the Midwest.
In the Midwest, apparently. Perhaps. All right.
Bigger than WGN?
Let's not get into technicalities. You just stop mentioning other station names.
Dump it.
God. Could we cut that? No. All right. Jerry Maginney, UrbanMilwaukee.com. This next story I love because I did not know this. When you can tell me something I don't know about Milwaukee, I appreciate you. It's something where all the food trucks all converge apparently every morning during their business?
Yeah.
During their business?
We have a series of tools inside our Milwaukee that help us track different permits and stuff. We're really trying to improve that recently. And one of the things that's always stood out is this address keeps showing up. And over again.
What is this thing?
8103 West Tower Avenue. Why are so many food dealer permits issued to 8103 West Tower Avenue? Well, pretty quickly we figured out it's this hub for food trucks. So a food truck, you can't just go make the food in your bathtub every morning. There are licensing issues here, health safety issues. You have to go to this shared commercial kitchen. And you're like, well, can I just clean my kitchen and have it be a shared commercial kitchen? No, a commercial kitchen is a high legal standard to meet.
Which is a good thing.
Yes, it's why when you eat at a food truck, you don't really worry about getting sick.
That's right.
So there's more than 50 food trucks. There's a lot of food trucks in Milwaukee, but more than 50 of them all lease space in what's called the neighborhood kitchen on the far northwest side. And it's run by a woman named Susie Wagner, who's a chef herself. And it's just this hub, and it's designed as this place where food trucks have a space that they can use. Other spaces on the south side, a lot of taco trucks operate out of like churches that historically have commercial kitchens. It's this great revenue source because a lot of the south side churches are in not dire financial straits, but in tougher financial situations. So it's an extra revenue stream. But this neighborhood kitchen has created a whole business for itself out on the far northwest side, serving food trucks.
She didn't come out of nowhere. She's got in her family. I was reading the story. It's in her background to work in a famous one, Boaters on the River, that sort of moved her into the right space that she could do something like this. I love that part of it.
Yeah, this is a real opportunity, and I'm happy to see someone seizing it. Not only that they're doing it, but they're doing it in Milwaukee, and they're doing it in a space, Tower Avenue. That's I don't think any of us could otherwise point it out on a map, like an overlooked spot of the city, and we're seeing a lot of business taking place there.
Very cool.
I love food trucks.
Do you have a favorite?
I don't want to pinpoint anyone particularly, but anything with a taco on it, I'm gonna have that. All right, barbecue, always good. You know, Double B's, I think, used to have a food truck. I don't know if they still do that, but Double B's in West Dallas, fantastic.
What about like drink carts? That's getting more popular, too.
As you know, big fan. Thanks for setting that up for me. All right. We'll do one more before the break.
Yeah, let's go to the art museum where things aren't as rosy. So this is an article on Urban Milwaukee, Trouble at the Art Museum, a Murphy's Law column by our editor, Bruce Murphy, came out on July 15th. And I'm being really explicit in pointing that out because there's a lot of numbers in this piece, and it'll be tough to explain them on the radio. But things at the art museum, the union is really sounding the alarm. A couple months ago, we broke the news under Milwaukee that the salary of the executive director, Marcel Poletnik, had really skyrocketed. And it seemed like on our discussions that maybe certain board members weren't fully aware of that she was getting $1.5 million per year. And conveniently, they're getting $500,000 per year from the county. Now, that's not where her salary was coming from, but the optics of that didn't look great. Well, now there's some layoffs coming. So the union that represents more than 100 workers there is raising alarm. And also Marcel Poletnik, according to one former board member, Fred Vogel, was asked to resign when her resignation was announced earlier this year. So things not going great at the art museum. We talked a little bit to the south of that at Summerfest about how it's like $20 and it's a great value. At the art museum, the price has been going up. The attendance has been going down, and it seems like it's becoming a problem there.
Hmm. Still amazing building.
Fantastic building, fantastic collection of art. I hope they right the ship with whoever the next CEO is.
How's Bruce Murphy doing?
Bruce Murphy is doing wonderfully.
Good. Keep that reporting. Going strong at the UrbanMilwaukee.com franchise business. And you got a gift shop now, apparently, or something going on.
They've had a gift shop.
Yeah, we have a sister business.
I got to stop in there. Like,
the Milwaukee app?
What would I buy in there?
Anything Milwaukee.
You have a t-shirt?
We got lots of t-shirts.
Right, I'll buy an UrbanMilwaukee.com t-shirt. Yeah, that's an easy one. I'll even buy one for you, Kristen. What's your size? Don't say it. Quick break.
Can you ask me how much I weigh? All right. As we have a couple minutes left in the show, and with our friend Jeremy Janine from Urban Milwaukee, what else do we want to cover in our precious time with you?
First, I'm going to turn on my microphone.
Yeah,
then,
that helps.
Then I'm going to fire through some things we've talked about, updates on a lot of past coverage. One thing we talked about, the intellectual inbreeding at MCTS and the challenges they're facing.
The interesting Peter phrase.
Yes, the Peter Principle. They've gone with an outsider. They've quickly hired a new director for the system, Steve Fuentes, who comes from the Chicago Transit Authority, a much larger transit system. He managed what appears to be the North Side bus operations, so Lincoln Park, think Wrigley Field, lots of buses around there. He's coming soon to Milwaukee to start managing MCTS. We also have a new hotel coming to the Third Ward. One of the things I think we'll find ourselves talking about, we talked about the Iron Horse going bankrupt before. That's maybe more the exception than the rule. But the hotel market continues to shift closer to the lake. This will also surprisingly be, we talked about Summerfest and all the people that come to that. This is only going to be the second hotel in the Third Ward. So NCG Hospitality, who's developed the trade and is developing the Moxie by Fiserv Forum, is now moving forward with an AC Marriott, which is a European-inspired brand for the former Rubens Furniture building. And then I have a lot of coverage on different housing issues this week. So if you're interested in that, go to UrbanMilwaukee.com. The city is, the Common Council has passed the growing MKE plan, and the mayor signed it into law yesterday. It also passed the Granny Flats proposal. And if you really want to get into the weeds, I wrote about the Milwaukee Community Land Trust. They're doing something really interesting where they divide the house from the land itself to create what is hopefully a forever affordable home that allows people to build wealth, but also preserves an affordable substitute.
Very cool. On the hotel thing, is the general consensus that we still need more hotels? Yes?
We need the right kind of hotels.
What does that mean exactly? Because I was just in the Pfister the other day. We have an amazing variety. That's an example. We have an amazing variety of hotels. That's the, you know, the gold standard. And there's everything else. The Trade, St. Kate's, I mean, all the Marriott properties. I mean, pick one.
So you've named that kind of the high end of the market. What you see in the St. Kate is an example of this, is hotels similar to shopping malls. They just kind of age out. They need improvements. And we have a lot of hotels.
But you're saying the St. Kate has aged out?
Well, the Intercontinental.
Right.
Yeah, so we saw a big investment to refresh, created the St. Kate. We're seeing a lot of hotels on the west side of downtown Wisconsin Avenue.
That's what, because I walk by some of the when we come to work, and you're like, oh, this is still a hotel. Like, I wonder what it looks like in there.
And I'm sure they're fine. They're just like, they don't have the amenities of a modern hotel. They're built around a big tube television, so the room dimensions are actually different in a hotel now because of the switch to flat screens. Yeah. But the shift towards the lake is just kind of the refresh cycle happening in hotels. And it seems like these West Wisconsin Avenue ones are, unless they're big investments coming, getting left behind.
What's your look ahead for the week? What are you looking forward to covering?
Last week I teased a housing authority piece. I'm still hoping that's coming out. I also have something we'll be certainly talking about next week, traffic calming data from the Department of Public Works showing what's working and how on all the different interventions the city is putting on city streets.
Nice.
Good stuff.
Bump outs.
Jeremy Janine, UrbanMilwaukee.com. Where's that gift shop place? Let's give you a little love.
755 North Milwaukee Street. All things Milwaukee gifts, t-shirts, books, postcards, magnets.
What's your favorite thing that you can buy there? What's your, like, most clever Milwaukee thing in there?
Well, yeah. I don't know about clever, but like my favorite thing is the shot glasses. We have this udder shot glass, so it looks like a cow with little udders that it stands at. No, it's a normal shot glass at the top. But
I will come and buy two t-shirts. I will not expect you to give me a t-shirt. I'll come and buy two.
Excellent.
You want the udder shot glass?
I wear XL. I don't know what your size is, but I'll pick up two at some point in the next 2 weeks. You're here next week, yeah?
I'm here next week.
All right, we'll be here tomorrow.
We will. Bill and Bill.
Bill and Joe McCoshin. Joseph Pecky, Bill McCoshin, the guys. There's a ton to talk about. I cannot wait to get them in studio, and they're both in studio, I believe. All right, let's do it tomorrow. News is next, 620 WTMJ.